We'll call the next case, please. Watson versus Potter.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Cecil Watson. I am the pro se appellant in this case of Watson versus Potter. This is an appeal from a Title VII judgment in favor of a defendant based upon a race, discrimination, and retaliation case in the workplace. This is an unusual case as it has continued from a 1990 discrimination complaint that I filed against my employer when I was denied a promotion to the position of River Forest Branch Manager. The three issues in this complaint have caused and created a significant adverse employment action. First of all, in directing the legal issues in this case, the court erred in finding that I did not meet my burden under the McDonnell-Douglas burden-shifting framework. I provided sufficient evidence and substantiated a prima facie case under McDonnell-Douglas burden-shifting framework, and that the defendant's preferred reasons were a pretext for discrimination. In the first issue of this complaint, in 1992, there were two managers who were afforded vacation leave for the same period. I was the assistant at the South Oak Park Post Office, which is the branch station of the Oak Park main office, and the River Forest manager, Mark Rosenwinkel. Two managers at South Station and River Forest were afforded leave at the same time. It has been the past practice of the Postal Service that whenever an employee is on leave, that they are fully covered, their positions are fully covered. I was required to fulfill the duties of both myself and my manager for a two-week period. What's significant is that the assistant at the River Forest Post Office was giving a full-time replacement. There are two managerial employees at both offices, a manager and a supervisor. I was required to absorb both duties because I was, quote, a seasoned supervisor. However, in establishing pretext, I also requested a vacation for the period of May of 1992 for a week, in which another supervisor had requested the same time. That leave was denied, and the reasons given were, cannot cover two. The staffing did not change from the period that my vacation request was denied in May to the time period that it was requested for two managers to be off during the same period in July of 1992. What is significant is that I was viewed as being a seasoned supervisor, but my manager, who was a seasoned manager, was not required to fulfill two duties in order to afford me the same opportunity to be off in May. And the second issue here, we have my rating, my annual merit rating, in which I received a very good rating in 1992. The rating is evaluated by your immediate supervisor. Being denied the promotion in 1990, my evaluator would have been a second level manager or a postmaster and not the manager of the South Oak Park Post Office. My rating was based upon my performance. However, it was the responsibility of the manager to make sure that he spoke with other individuals who had knowledge of my performance. I was viewed or characterized by the Oak Park manager staff as management staff as being a rising star in the Postal Service. I was promoted faster than anyone known. In 1991-1992, I was on a national regional audit team, one of 40 persons selected from out of 107 post offices to conduct nationwide audits. During that time period, I saved the Postal Service a significant amount of money, thousands of dollars to be exact. During that period of time, that was not considered by my immediate manager, Mr. James Riccio. My point is that if I had been properly promoted in 1990, Mr. Riccio would have been a manager at the South Oak Park Post Office, I would have been a manager at the River Forest Post Office, and he would not have been my immediate evaluator. The third issue in this case involves my displacement from the Oak Park Post Office in March of 1993. During 1992-93, the Postal Service underwent a nationwide restructuring in which all supervisory positions were eliminated. Each employee who was affected was required to submit what is known as a 991, an application. I submitted that application. It was submitted to the district, and one of my choices included remaining at the Oak Park Post Office. On February 3rd of 1993, the postmaster received authorization to increase his complement from 8 supervisors to 9. 2 weeks later, he received notification that that was an error, that instead of increasing his complement, he would be losing two of his present supervisors. On February 22nd, the postmaster took it upon himself to have a meeting, what I considered a secret meeting, with several of my peers. Excluded from that meeting was myself and the two junior supervisors at the Oak Park Post Office. They were called upon to help him decide, based upon our strengths and our weaknesses, as to whom should be accepted out of the Oak Park Post Office. In the testimony of each of the witnesses who were called upon to give testimony during the bench trial, not one of them testified that they had any ability or could they give any account of my strengths or my weaknesses. The court also concluded in its decision that I was not a team player, and that was one of the reasons that I was being excessed, that I had poor people skills, I generated more customer complaints than any other employee. However, in establishing pretext, I'll go back to the fact that I was placed on a regional audit team, one of 40 persons out of 107 post offices. If I had poor people skills, I would not have been placed in a high profile assignment. During the period of November up until March, when I was excessed out of the Oak Park Post Office, I assumed the duties of the acting manager when my manager, former manager, James Riccio, retired. If I had poor people skills and was not a team player, then clearly I would not have been placed in the fourth highest level position in the Oak Park Post Office. The decision to place me in that position came from the two individuals who originally denied me my promotion to a manager position in 1990. During the course of that secret meeting, my EEO activity was discussed, and the person who made reference to my EEO activity was the postmaster himself, Ronald Pusateri. Mr. Pusateri stated that I had caused him woes, and he made this known to the other supervisors, and as a result of that, I was excessed and removed from the Oak Park Post Office and assigned to the Addison, Illinois Post Office as a supervisor of customer services. Again, management witnesses have testified that as a manager, I would not have been excessed out of the Oak Park Post Office. It's clearly an adverse employment action, and here we are in the year 2002, and I'm still seeking relief from a case that has gone on now for over 12 years. I'll reserve the rest of my comments.
Thank you.
May it please the court. I think what is most important here on this appeal is that we had a trial in the district court, and Mr. Watson was able to present his evidence where it should have been presented in the district court. The Postal Service presented its evidence. The judge considered all of the evidence, assessed the credibility of all the witnesses, as district courts do, and found that the United States Postal Service did nothing wrong, that there was no intentional discrimination on its part against Mr. Watson for any of these three actions of which he complains. The district court not only found that it was the right decision, let alone there was no basis for this court here to find that there was any clear error in that court's ruling. I'll address very briefly the three issues Mr. Watson raises as potential adverse employment actions. The first is failure to provide him with an assistant while a couple managers were on vacation. This was for a four-day period. The scheduler at the time testified that he believed when he let his two managers take their simultaneous vacations that he had enough people to provide full coverage. The district court assessed his testimony, his credibility, and found that to be an honest answer. and the fact that Mr. Watson did not have an assistant for 4 days while he had been temporarily promoted and received both the responsibilities and the pay of that temporary promotion is not an adverse employment action. And as the district court found, there was no discriminatory basis for that. As Mr. Watson fails to point out, on his day off of that week, which was Wednesday, his replacement, who was a white male who had not filed any EEO actions, had similar lack of assistant coverage on that day. His second issue, which is his employment rating, 1992, no one in the Oak Park Post Office received an outstanding employment rating. Postmaster didn't receive one, his deputy didn't receive one, none of the managers received one, Mr. Watson's supervisor did not receive one. There were no outstandings issued in the Oak Park Post Office during that year. Third issue, which is probably the most complicated sounding, but it's actually very simple, is his failure to retain him at the Oak Park Post Office. And as Mr. Watson stated to this court, during the nationwide restructuring, the Oak Park Post Office was granted 9 supervisors. The postmaster there made offers to all 8 existing supervisors, including Mr. Watson. He wanted to keep Mr. Watson. 2 weeks later, in what the postmaster testified was the saddest day of his professional life, he learned he had to lose 3 of these supervisors. He quickly made a decision on the first one to go, which was the one who wasn't at Oak Park previously and he had brought in. The second choice, he said, was not very difficult because there was one supervisor who was so junior to everybody else, he was the next one to go. The third and most agonizing choice was between Mr. Watson and another supervisor by the name of Ben Cazone. So what the postmaster did, he did not want to get rid of Watson, and he did not just throw him out the door, but did everything he could do to keep him. And when it came down to make that last decision, he did hold a meeting, not a secret meeting, but it was a meeting between all the supervisors who were going to stay, the people who were going to have to work with this last one to get their input. He got their input. And as the district court found, based upon the testimony and the credibility of the witnesses, the postmaster said the most important thing he had to do was have somebody who knew how to handle the mail processing end, which is when the mail comes into the post office, that's mail processing, and then it goes to the carriers, and that's mail delivery. And he needed somebody who had extensive experience in mail processing. As testified at trial, Mr. Watson had 1 week in that area. Ben Cazone, the gentleman who eventually got the job, had been doing it for years and years and years, and filled in as an acting supervisor well above his pay grade level. And based upon that, the postmaster decided Mr. Cazone was the appropriate one to stay at the Oak Park Post Office. And as the district court found, after considering all the evidence and the credibility of the witnesses, that was a truthful and honest reason, and that's why Mr. Watson was not retained in favor of Mr. Cazone. I think as I said at the beginning, the operative part of this appeal here is that there was a trial. This case did turn out its facts. The court made factual findings, made credibility findings, and that there's no basis for this court to reverse them because they are not clearly erroneous.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
In counterpointing a couple of issues that counsel just expressed, number one, he was in error. In 1992, 2 supervisors did receive outstanding ratings. That was Richard Kohlberg and Lionel Ross. In 1993, I used that comparison to also pull up the records for 1993. In order for one to receive an outstanding rating, one has to go above and beyond the call of duty, provide a significant improvement to the operation. There's a 10% cap on employees who are able to receive an outstanding rating. This covers the 107 post offices within the Northern Illinois District. In 1993, 5 out of 8 supervisors received outstanding ratings. 3 of them had no goals. 2 of them just received outstanding ratings, and they didn't even exceed or achieve any of the goals. So that is an error. Mr. Cazone, as he pointed out, has significant experience. That is incorrect. Mr. Cazone, his primary title was a relief supervisor. They can almost be characterized or comparable to that of a substitute teacher. You're a fill-in. He filled in on the regular supervisor's day off. He was my replacement on my day off. He was also in error when he stated that Mr. Cazone assume the duties of myself and that of himself on July 15th. That is incorrect. I was there. Mr. Cazon was my assistant. Mr. Cazon has never been an acting manager. Out of the supervisors that were excess, if I demonstrated in 1990 that I was more qualified for the position of a manager, then it's inconceivable that I wouldn't have been more qualified for the duties of an initial level supervisory position, which is what Mr. Cazon's position was, an initial level supervisor. During the course of time that I was excess out of the Oak Park Post Office, I continued to assume the role of that of a supervisor and not that of a manager that I was entitled to. Mr. Fusateri relied again upon the input from his supervisors. Now, one of those persons who were at that meeting was Richard Colbert, a level 14 maintenance supervisor. A maintenance supervisor has absolutely no knowledge of my background. At the time, I was a level 18 acting manager. Those persons who were called upon to give input were in lesser level positions than I was. So if anybody should have been the first person that he selected, it should have been me. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you, sir. Thank you, counsel. We will proceed to case number 4.